Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a very accomplished entrepreneur from the UK, Mr. Sharath Jeevan. Sharath, welcome to the show.
Ashutosh, such a pleasure. So nice to join you today.
Thank you. Sharath is the chairman of Intrinsic Labs. He's the founder of Stir Education, the world's largest intrinsic motivation initiative. He has been named in the top 10 social entrepreneurs in the UK, and his forthcoming book, Intrinsic, will, I'm sure, be available on Amazon and a whole lot of other platforms. So Sharath, let's first talk about Stir Education. Tell me about this venture.
Yeah, thanks, Ashish. And it was such an important learning piece. And I think I believe so much in the vision of the podcast and this idea that as leaders, we're about learning and developing this idea of mastery. What I spent 10 years doing, and probably the 10 toughest years of my life professionally, were trying to figure out how to help teachers in countries like India. We worked in about 30,000 schools. We reached about 200,000 or 2 lakh teachers. And we worked with about 6 million children in India as well. How do we try and reignite the inner drive, the intrinsic motivation of those teachers? And of course, India has had a long tradition of teaching and the nobility of teaching. The idea of a guru is thousands of years old, as we know.
Right.
But what had happened is the government in India built about a million schools very quickly over the last 10, 15 years. It's a great achievement. Mm-hmm. 240 million children are in the school system now.
Right.
But you know what had happened is in that rush to expand access, we'd lost, if you like, the moral purpose of teaching and the motivation of teachers. And I spent 10 of the toughest years when I was trying to figure out how to reignite it, how to bring it back.
Fascinating. So for our viewers and listeners, help me understand the meaning of intrinsic motivation.
Yeah, so I describe it a bit like, you know, driving a car, Ashutosh. And you know, imagine you're in Delhi. I know you're based in Gurgaon. And, you know, you're going on a taxi and it's powered by, you know, diesel, LPG, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. It gets you from A to B, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not always a pleasant ride. Obviously, Delhi, I've spent so much time there over the last 10 years.
Sure.
It's one of the toxic places in the world that way. And if you think about it, that's like extrinsic motivation. It's you are getting to the place you want to get to, mm-hmm. but it's usually through some kind of contingent reward. You know, you're doing something because something is promised at the end. And, you know, you go to this, you want to get the promotion because you get a salary hike, or you think you get a fancier title, for example. Mm-hmm. What we're learning about extrinsic motivation is it gets the job done in some ways, but it's not a very fulfilling place to be. Mm-hmm. It's not very sustainable. And these things start reducing their effect over time. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a trader in the UK who got a £20 million bonus. Okay. Last year.
Wow.
And his first reaction was not, you know, how excited he was. He said the guy next door to me, he got 22 million. Okay. And I'm thinking of leaving the company now.
Okay.
So these things are not, you know, they plateau and they have a diminishing effect. Mm. Intrinsic motivation is like a, you know, electric car. You're gliding on the streets of Delhi or Gurgaon. It feels pleasurable, enjoyable. You're doing it because you enjoy doing that thing, whether it's work or parenting or relationships or your life as a citizen. Mm-hmm. And it's a genuinely pleasurable ride. Mm-hmm. And so what we're learning is the more we can live our lives by intrinsic principles, mm-hmm. the more likely we'll be successful, happy, and fulfilled overall.
Fascinating. And you also mentioned that we are in a motivational mess today. Help me understand this, maybe with an example or an anecdote.
Yeah, so my book, Intrinsic, it's now out in India and all around the world on Amazon and other places, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. What I tried to talk about is 5 motivational crises. So the world of work, how we think about success and talent, mm-hmm. our relationships with our significant other, our parenting, and our citizenship. It's a very broad book and tries to bring all these ideas together. Mm. Let me give you a couple of examples, Ashutosh. So the core framework the book uses is these ideas of purpose, autonomy, and mastery. And what we're learning is that these are the drivers that really make us feel motivated and engaged in life. Mm. Purpose, if you like, is that destination we put into the GPS of that car, the sense of helping and serving others. Autonomy, the sense of being at the wheel, really, of the car and being able to drive in the way we want to. And mastery, becoming a better and better driver as we navigate those streets. No?
Okay.
So let's take work as an example, right? And, you know, if you think about, you know, all most jobs out there, they exist to help and serve others ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happened is we've created organizations where we've got silos, functions, departments, budgets, all this management speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken away from that purpose. And now, you know, across the world, 85% of us around the world, according to Gallup, are either disengaged or actively disengaged in our work today. And so one of the key ideas in the book is how do we move work from this kind of cynical, jaded place to one where we can really feel authentic, excited, motivated to work. I spend a lot of time talking to corporate India and, you know, I'd meet software engineers, for example, on some of these gleaming tech campuses, right? In Gurgaon or in Bangalore or Chennai or anywhere else.
Yes.
And it's amazing. They were first generation, you know, many times the first generation to go to university and college, first generation to work in a kind of gleaming office like that, first generation to work in a metro that are maybe coming from a tier two city and so in India. But they were talking like Californians. They were saying things like, you know, I don't feel purpose in what I do anymore. I feel a bit empty. So I think it's so important that all of us as employers and employees, we connect that purpose again and we figure out, remember that idea, I think all of us should have a personal mission statement. Let me give you mine as an example. You know, I help organizations and individuals to reignite inner drive through writing, coaching, consulting. That's it. They're very simple. But if we all have that sense of that purpose line, it'll help us stay motivated overall.
Interesting. So let me dig a little more, little deeper on the personal mission statement. I think, you know, I completely agree with you and, you know, and this mission statement changes through the, through one's life. So like, you know, my mission statement is to be able to reach out to thousands of people across the world who can share their knowledge, experience, and wisdom, as well as leadership lessons with millions of people. But I'd like to understand from you, for our viewers and listeners, how do you go about writing a personal mission statement?
So I think a lot of it's really starting with the person you're trying to serve, Ashutosh. So what I've found about motivation is people who are really obsessed by what I call a wicked problem. You know, think of Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, the wicked problem there. They're the ones that stay the most motivated.
Okay.
What happens with a lot of leaders and entrepreneurs is that we tend to get fixated by a solution. We believe we have the best mousetrap, the best way of fixing education or dealing with retention in the corporate workplace, whatever it might be. I think it starts by really figuring out the right problem to solve. What's that problem we're going to devote the next 5-10 years of our life towards contributing towards? And a wicked problem is one, there's never going to be an easy solution. Education, health, any of these things, we're never going to solve this inequality, whatever it might be. We're not going to solve it fully. How do we find that? Once we know the problem, think about, okay, what contribution can we make that's unique? So in the STIR case, we realized that there were a lot of people in education, you know, classic wicked problem, dealing with tech, you know, assessment, teaching, curriculum, et cetera. Motivation was very fuzzy. No one wanted to touch it. We were crazy enough to say, let's be the ones to try and make a dent in that problem because we can make a unique contribution. If you like, the soil is more fertile. So all the other seeds being planted can be faster and taller as well.
Okay. Interesting. So again, when I was reading about you, you know, you spoke about languishing and treading motivational water. Now, which really means that when you're treading water, you're really staying place in one place. How do I, or how does one recognize that one is languishing and basically treading motivational water?
So I would say, Ashish, after the pandemic, my answer would have been different maybe 2 years ago, but almost all of us have been languishing. I think if I look at, you know, what's happened in India and so many loved ones and people I care for, have had very harrowing experiences, either personally or their friends. You know, it's natural we kind of retreat inwards. For these 18 months, especially the last 6 months, our main priority has been with our family and our own health. That's completely normal and very, you know, very right. But it's a bit like, as you said, treading water. And if we keep treading water for too long, there's a risk of drowning. We've got to get back to our lives and live them as really thriving, flourishing individuals. The only thing is I also don't think we should just go back to the way things were before. I think this is given, as I talk to so many friends and family in India who have gone through a profound change in how they see the world, what they want to be as a parent, as a as a leader, as a worker. Mm. And I think the really interesting thing is that idea of these things connecting. Before, I think people would see, okay, I'd go in, I'd literally, you know, stay at friends in India and see a friend putting on his, you know, shirt, work shirt. It's like putting the corporate armor on. No? Mm. Now I think it's that we're all human beings and we've all seen each other's bedrooms now through Zoom and the Teams. We're much more integrated people. That's one of the ideas of the book. Mm. I think that idea that we need to find that better motivational place in all the things that matter to us and stop languishing, starting to swim again. Mm. And the book is a guide to think about these key areas of our lives and how we can engage more deeply motivation in each area there.
Very interesting. So, you know, most people in the last 18 months have been working from home and, you know, it's beginning to impact personal lives, beginning to impact individuals. What are your thoughts on how work from home has impacted motivation?
I think there's really compelling data that we had initially globally, and I think India is a good example, Ashish. There was a spike at the beginning of the pandemic where there was almost like this kind of, wow, this is like a really exciting new thing. And I know how Indian commutes can be often hours long, if you're going from Noida to Delhi or Gurgaon or something. So, so I think there was a little bit of a like euphoria, like a honeymoon period, right? When people realized that. I think what's happened now is we've worn down our social capital down to such low levels. I do think purpose, that idea of helping and serving others, that's the core of work. Mm-hmm. And that builds on this idea of relationships, either with the people we're end serving, maybe our customers or clients, mm-hmm. but also the people we're nurturing as leaders in our organizations. Mm-hmm. And I think that connect is so much harder with remote work. So mm-hmm. what I think we need to do is try to get back to some of these hybrid arrangement mm-hmm. that's happening, but also think about when I'm in the office, what am I really trying to do? What's the purpose of that? Mm-hmm. I think we were in a bit of like a no man's land before where we were in the office in a very noisy, busy office. You couldn't mm-hmm. do any individual work. Mm-hmm. It wasn't great for collaboration either, right? It was mm-hmm. hard to get a meeting room. You'd be constantly having to, you know, play games to do musical chairs. Mm-hmm. I think now the idea of let's go into those days together and let's really nurture people, coach them. Mm-hmm. Let's collaborate. Let's share ideas together. When I'm at home and I don't have to commute every day, mm-hmm. let me use that time to really do deep individual work and do some thoughtful work to plan my year ahead, help my team be better. So just thinking about more purposefully how we use our working environments better.
Well said. But, you know, I'm a much older person, and over the last four decades, you know, there is a certain amount of value in management by walking around with your cup of coffee, sitting in different rooms and chatting, or management while having a cup of coffee at the coffee machine. All that has gone. How does one connect and motivate individuals if you're not able to look them in the eye or touch and feel them?
I think it's much harder, Shish. And I talked to Prithviraj Chowdhury at Harvard Business School for a discussion I had for the book. And he was talking about things like virtual water coolers and so on. And you know, I think you look very young, Ashish, but I think maybe our generation.
I'm going to be 65 tomorrow. So
okay, you don't look it at all. So I'm 40. I'm turning 45 in a few days. So that idea, but yeah. So I think we can use technology a little bit. We've got to be a bit more deliberate. And I think those of us who maybe haven't grown up with it, that I count my generation as well, we need to learn to be much more deliberate and also more vulnerable on a Zoom call. It's very easy to, you know, think about like we wear the armor online and where it can be more relaxed in person. We've got to slowly change our mental models. But I do think that element of, you know, when you're in the office, there was a lot of data actually that, you know, shows that in a physical office, 70% of your interaction is with the floor you're on. So let's say you and I were in the same company, mm-hmm. you're one floor below, it would be almost unlikely that I would be meeting you and talking to you. So right. If we're in an office then, okay, when we are in the office, let's make sure that walking around is actually properly purposeful. Mm-hmm. We go to every team, we talk to everyone, mm-hmm. we make sure everyone feels, you know, recognized. Let's be a bit more deliberate in that as well.
Okay. One more question relating to motivation, and then we move to the next segment. How does stress impact motivation? And stress is coming in from work from home because of the pandemic, but stress is also in the workplace with a bad boss or a bad set of colleagues or whatever you can.
Yeah, I think what we're learning about stress, and I talk about this in the book, that actually it's about how we work the hours we work mm-hmm. as much as it is about the number of hours worked per se. Mm. So I looked in the book at Sweden, for example, where less than 1% of Swedes now work more than 50 hours a a week. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing achievement, right? I think many more of us do that. So, but actually, the rate of clinical depression and anxiety in Sweden has been climbing astronomically. Mm-hmm. So I think emptiness at work, alienation, the sense of not being purposeful, not helping and serving others, not having that autonomy, not developing the mastery in what we do, that's as demotivating. So I think for stress, it's a lot of it's about how do you configure really motivating environments for all workers, especially for leaders, so everyone feels they're bringing their best self to work. Mm-hmm. And we're nurturing them. We're really helping them get to places where they wouldn't have got to otherwise. Okay. If we create that, I think we will massively reduce them. And I do believe in yoga and mindfulness. All these things are important. Mm-hmm. But at the core, I think we've got to make work more purposeful to reduce stress.
Very well said. So, Sharath, now let's move to your book, Intrinsic. And you've just told me that it's already been released. And it is available on Amazon and in India from Flipkart and I'm sure a lot of other platforms. Tell me about this book and what motivated you to write it.
Yeah, so actually I started writing before the pandemic and I was just really feeling like we were in a motivational mess, as you said. Mm-hmm. We were very confused. And, you know, I think that as I'm a parent to two young boys, one 10 and 7, for example, mm-hmm. and I feel this every day about what, you know, what I'm, the school system they're in, for example, is one where increasingly the idea of schooling is not to nurture people. I'll just take one example in the book, but also to just cream skim the best students. Mm-hmm. Put them through so the school gets a good result in the league table or the rankings in their state or country and so on as well. Mm. So this idea that, you know, we're deeply messed up ourselves as adults, but we're inflicting the same motivational mess on our children and perpetuating the problem to the next generation. That was really the core idea behind the book. And it's a very global book. A lot of it's set in India, but also in Africa, in the US, the UK, Europe. Many emerging countries. So what I was also finding, this is not a topic now for pampered Westerners. It's really a topic that all of us are feeling. And the idea of the book is to really help us live a better life by looking at the key pillars of our lives, from work to our relationships. How can we find this better New Deal motivation?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And again, when I was reading about you and your book, I read an interesting question, which is, so I'm going to ask you, how can we fall back in love with our lives and create the lives we want? Because whenever I speak to someone, generally people's response is, I hate what I'm doing. I'd love your response.
Yeah, so I think this goes, let's talk about careers. I do think it has, you know, work is a really important aspect of our overall motivation. And there's some data from McKinsey showing that 70% of our purpose in life mm-hmm. comes from our work now, post-pandemic. So I think careers are a good place to start. So let's look at how we think about careers most of the time. We think of it with a almost a, what I'd call in the book a scarcity mindset, right? There are a certain number of jobs out there. My role is to try and make sure I get one of those roles. Mm-hmm. Actually, the data from economists now all over the world, and India, especially given it's a relatively fast-growing country, mm-hmm. there is no fixed amount of jobs, right? We can create jobs. And the more educated you are, the more likely I'll be educated, the better both our jobs will be. Mm. So trying to move away from this idea of survival of the fittest. You know, that's how corporate India largely, I think, works. I went back to read Charles Darwin again, you know, who, mm-hmm. who that was the way the term came from. He didn't mean, you know, be stronger, faster, muscle in on things. Mm. He meant be diverse. He was talking about diversity many years before the idea. So I think it's so important we find a niche that's really unique to us, very authentic to us. And we try to figure out what's special to us that is unique to us that we can play on. Mm-hmm. Let me just give you a very practical example. I have an amazing accountant in London who does my accounts. He's very technically competent. He's qualified, all these things, but he's a great people person. Mm-hmm. And so very good at building relationships, easy to talk to. That's not always easy in the world of accounting. Right. He gets an amazing clientele based on that strength. Mm-hmm. So all of us, this, how do you be distinctive? How do you stand out?
Right.
And also, how do you find a good nurture around you who can help nurture that unique strength in your life?
Okay. And a follow-up question to that is, how can we get lasting fulfillment and success?
So I think in our personal lives, you know, let's take relationships, whether we're married or have a boyfriend or girlfriend. Mm-hmm. It's getting harder. If you live in a metro nowadays, for example, or a busy city anywhere, you know, we have these lives where we're together a lot more. We're spending much more time in families now. Mm-hmm. But that time is often not very, very strong quality time. Mm-hmm. And not very meaningful in that way. And often the challenges are our deepest insecurities, our vulnerabilities. They come when, you know, we're washing the dishes or we're putting our kids to bed. There's no kind of State of the Union address or quarterly earnings call that marks things out. How do we stay attentive to each other in relationships so we can listen out for these kind of emotional bids? And John Gottman used that term, but how do we try and, you know, stay, I mean, listen deeply, be there for that person and provide that emotional safety? The world is a really scary place. We've seen that with the pandemic. But if we give that unconditional love to our significant other, they will feel able to take the risks they need to take and feel nurtured through their lives as well and motivated as well.
Fascinating. So I'm now going to move to the last segment of our conversation. All our viewers and listeners love to get to know my guest a little better. So a few questions for you personally. So, you know, I'd love to understand from you, what were some of the, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points in your life or your career?
So I'd say one was, I think, really growing up, I grew up in Saudi Arabia as a kid, Ashish. And I, first in the UK, my parents were very adventurous and they are doctors. They went to the Saudi National Health Service. I grew up there, and one of the peak perks of the job was I was able to go back to India every summer and spend the summers with my grandparents in Chennai. And I think that connection back with India was very, very powerful for me. It stayed with me all my life. And that sense, I think, of also seeing people of very different economic groups. There was a lot of poverty in those days in India, much more than we have now. But that sense of trying to help and serve others, I think, was very strong. It was probably one pivot point. The second, I think, was, you know, I because of being an immigrant to the UK, an Indian immigrant, I felt a strong desire to tick boxes, right, and jump through hoops. So I went to Cambridge. I got a first at Cambridge. I went to join a top-tier consulting firm, Booz & Company after. Went to INSEAD for an MBA. So I followed a very... I went to realize this was not really giving me much fulfillment after a while. I was doing it more to look good myself on a CV rather than feeling I was really helping people deeply. And so the second pivot point is leaving the corporate sector about 15 years ago, going to the social sector and starting my first initiative in the UK. And the third pivot point has been, it's been through the pandemic. And I realized that I loved what I was doing in education. I was working on this question of motivation for teachers, but this was such a big global issue now that I was kind of uncovering that applied to all of our lives in work, our relationships, parenting, citizenship. So the book, I think, was a real pivot. And also this chance to advise, consult, and, you know, work with leaders and organizations on these topics around the world. So probably three big pivot points in my life.
Fascinating. So time for two more questions for you, and I'm trying to decide what to ask you. But let me ask you a question on failure. And you are of Indian origin. You haven't lived there, but I've often said, and I have a book on failure. I've often said parents in India or South Asia don't teach children it's okay to fail. We're always told come first in class, go to the head of the line, etc. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns. My question to you is, what have been your learnings from some of your mistakes?
I think the most important thing I've learned to do, and this brings your point on parenting, Ashish, let me just tell you a story to bring to life. A close friend of mine lost his job. He's mid-40s like me, and a lot of us are losing jobs at this stage of our careers, right? We're expensive, there are people out there that are perhaps hungrier and sort of should employ. But he didn't tell his son for several weeks. And I just asked him, we'd had a little bit of a reflection as friends. I said, look, you know, think about this. Look, what are you role modeling now? You're saying that basically, if there's a setback, don't tell the people that matter most in your life about it. There's something that happened. All of us are going to lose jobs around. It's inevitable, right?
Right.
We sort of, again, this idea that a failure does not mean we are a failure. We can fail at something or something that can be a setback. That doesn't mean we are judged or tarnished by that brush. The third thing is that we need to also show our kids that life is a zigzag. It's not a straight line, as I talk about in the book, that we will step back and get back on that. So let me give you an example. I applied to a very prestigious US scholarship a few months ago. It was for a part-time trip to the US, and my kids are very excited, you know, what it would be like to go to America together. And I didn't get it. And I remember at the dinner table with my son, I told him, look, I'm really sorry. I just got the rejection form today. But he saw me 2 days later get back and have a jump in my step again. I was a bit subdued that evening, but he's seen me fail, but he knows I'm not a failure. And I think that that role modeling as parents, that's the most important motivational input we can give to our kids.
Wonderful. How nice. And my last question to you, who or what inspires you?
I think what really inspires me as an idea is this, and there are many leaders, I think, who are doing this really well, Ashish, but this idea that all of our talents can be nurtured. I think one of the key ideas of the book is that we're in this winner-takes-all world where it feels like, you know, the spoils of any kind of field or industry go to a few people. I looked at Roger Federer, who I'm a huge fan, but he got a $300 million deal from Uniqlo, the manufacturer of clothing, at the end of his career. And yet the top, the 100th best player in the world in the tennis tour can barely make ends meet.
Right.
And that's a good signal. It's in so many fields, it feels like that now. I think this idea that, you know, things like, you know, we can create organizations, and our role as leaders is to create these spaces where all of us feel recognized and nurtured in terms of our strengths, our motivation, talents. And I think if we can do that as leaders and really help everyone get to a place they wouldn't have got to otherwise, if we can all be great talent nurturers to others, I think that's an amazing world to live in. And I hope we can build that world together.
Fantastic. Sharath, on that note, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for talking to me about your book, Intrinsic. And I would encourage all our viewers and listeners to go and have a look at the book and see if you're interested enough to buy it. Thank you again for sharing so much of what you're doing now, and good luck.
Thanks so much, Ashish. Real pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.